two guys of Minnesota sports flowing in their veins. Mackie and Judd on Score North and ScoreNorth.com.
He's a veteran guy, he's been in the pro bowler. He's a future Hall of Famer. He's a great guy to have in your corner. He teaches us young guys a lot about the ins and outs of the game. So just being underneath his wing, I just feel very confident and, just highly aware when I go out there Sunday and perform for the team.
And welcome into the bonus scoop time. That, of course, being Cam Dantzler, who's going to take the spot for the next few weeks, at least, of Patrick Peterson at the cornerback position. Bonus scoop means that along with Zolgad and executive producer Declan Goff, he's back. That's right. From Florida, suntanned, well-rested. Our guy, Darren Doogie Wolfson, Channel 5 Eyewitness News and scoop master for Score North. What is up, Darren? I hope you had a good time in Florida.
It was a good time. I am glad to be back, though, Jug. Good to see you, Declan. Yes, tan. Ready? That's a question mark. Well rested? That's also a question mark, Judd, when you've got a 10 and a 7-year-old that just go nonstop. But they were the perfect age for all the rides at Magic Kingdom, for all the water slides, having a good time at Clearwater Beach a couple Saturdays ago. So it worked out really well. But oftentimes, like, this is how I feel. Coming off a vacation, maybe Declan can relate, coming back from Chicago the other day. Like, I need that many days to recover from said vacation. So we were in Florida for about 7 days. I need, like, 7 days to recover. So, like, end of this week, I'll be good to go.
We don't have that much time because, as you know, Doogie, the scoops don't rest. So there is no time for Rocco's love of R&R, okay? So let's start with this. Vikings, as they come back from the bye and get set to play host to the Cowboys in what opens an incredibly important four-game stretch on Sunday night, and the trade deadline is actually a week from today on Tuesday, what can you tell us about what the Vikings might be sniffing around after they already made a deal on Saturday? Rick Spielman was sitting right by me in the press box at Huntington Bank Stadium when news of the deal came down, but what might be percolating with the Vikings?
Yeah, and on that deal, Stephen Weatherly wanted out. When he signed here, he thought he had a legit chance to start to beat out DJ Wanham. He did not foresee them signing Everson Griffin much later on. He wasn't playing. He's at the point of his career where, like, he needs to put some stuff on tape to earn another contract for next year. So make no mistake about that. He welcomed this opportunity to go join George Payton and those Denver Broncos. Yeah, it was a busy scouting weekend, by the way. So Spielman was at Huntington Bank Stadium for the Gophers game. I know the Vikings had scouts at the Michigan Northwestern game, the Kansas Oklahoma game, the Clemson Pittsburgh game. So the Vikings had scouts out and about all weekend long. Yeah, the trade deadline 1 week from today. I can see them making another move, but I don't think it's going to be a big move. I know that there's been a lot of, and I don't know who started it, but it has picked up steam because I've gotten tweets about it. I've gotten some emails about it, about the Vikings trading for that star cornerback for the Miami Dolphins, Howard, who's not having a particularly great year. Right. He's got a huge cap number, but he has been good in the past. I checked specifically on his name. Now, we'll see if anything changes in the next, 7 days. But as of the other day, a high-ranking Vikings official, I ran the idea by this person. He texted back. It's BS. So there is nothing percolating when it comes to the Vikings talking to the Dolphins about the cornerback Howard.
So is there a chance here? Because I think Dex and I, Phil not so much, are in lockstep on this. Is there a chance, though, when it comes to the cornerback position with Peterson out for at least 3 games? And I contend a 31-year-old corner with a hamstring is probably more than 3 games because you don't want him to try to come back in that fourth game and get hurt, that the Vikings would pursue cornerback depth, because it strikes me as Chris Boyd and Harrison Hand aren't exactly great depth guys. And this is a league now, Doogie, where you need 3 starting corners. Like, it's not 2 guys, it's 3 guys. So in sniffing around, have you gotten any hints that the Vikings might be trying to add, if nothing else, veteran depth, if something were to happen to Alexander, Breland, or Dantzler?
Yeah, I think those conversations are happening, Judd. I can't sit here and guarantee you with 100% certainty that they end up making a trade. I can tell you with 100% certainty they are planting seeds. I guess I would not be surprised if they end up trading for a cornerback. I mean, you're right. I mean, heck, I remember Mike Zimmer telling my boss, my colleague, my dear friend, Joe Schmidt, in a one-on-one conversation right before the season opener in early September, that he only felt confident about 25 to 26 to 27 players on the 53-man roster. So you can do the math on that. He didn't feel particularly impressed at the time about his cornerback depth. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I can see them. You know, I don't have a name to throw out there quite yet. You can look at the teams that are struggling. Mm-hmm. I know Bleacher Report tossed out a Houston cornerback. Sure. I mean, Houston looks like they're willing to do some different things. So you can look at some teams that are struggling that look like obvious sellers and look at the cornerbacks on those rosters. So, yeah, I mean, I think they are making phone calls, Jed. I have a strong sense that they are, you know, planting some seeds. And, yeah, I mean, that would be the one position more than any else that I would look at. And you're right. I mean, 31 years old, hamstring.
Yeah.
Like, I know Rick Spielman last Tuesday in a conference call with reporters where he was relatively optimistic. Maybe I'm paraphrasing slightly. Again, I was on vacation, so I wasn't on it, but I talked to some people that were on it. He was relatively optimistic that Peterson can be back for that November 21st game against the Packers. But I'm with you. Like, 31 years old, hamstring, no guarantees.
Right.
So let's wait and see where he's at, you know, about 2-3 weeks from now. But, yeah, like, you think of the 17-game schedule. It's like this three-game stretch where we know Peterson is out, and he's been phenomenal, by the way. I mean, Cam said it, future Hall of Famer. He's been playing at a Hall of Fame-esque level this year, even at 31 years old. But, like, this is the worst three-game stretch he could miss. And I know some people will come back and say, well, Lamar Jackson, Baltimore, they run the ball. Hey, Rashad Bateman, Hollywood Brown, trust me, just look at the numbers. Lamar Jackson, that Baltimore passing offense, pretty darn good. Then when you look at the Chargers passing offense, the Cowboys passing offense, I know there's optimism in Dallas that Dak Prescott will be able to play. Now you wonder, you know, with that calf injury, you know, will he even be at 85 or 90%? But there is optimism early this week that Dak Prescott will play on Sunday. So you think about that Cowboys passing offense, that Chargers passing offense, and even Baltimore. This is the worst possible three-game stretch, and potentially more if you include that Packers game on November 21st for your star cornerback to miss.
Exactly right. Who is potentially back then on Sunday night against the Cowboys?
I mean, I certainly anticipate Michael Pierce doing some stuff at practice tomorrow. Will he be a full participant, a limited participant?
Right.
That remains to be seen, but I think it's trending in the right direction. The sense when he initially hurt that elbow was that this was not going to be a 6-7, 8-week type injury, that this was just going to be a couple games. So I can certainly see Michael Pierce back on the field Sunday night.
Probably a brace, right?
Yeah, like, I mean, there's ways.
Because, I mean, it doesn't – it's not like he has to really use his arm. Well, he does a bit. But I would guess that this strikes me as the type of big man – injury where it probably is going to eventually require surgery probably after the season, but you come back and try and play through it. And look, Dukes, the one thing that has to improve without question defensively post by run defense, like there, I looked up the stat. I believe for last season, they were in the bottom third of the league and they were giving up something like 134.4 yards per game. It's still like 126 or something. So without a doubt, the one area where this defense and Pierce can play a big role, no pun intended, in this is that has to improve or it's going to be a problem. And that's the type of thing that can definitely cost you games.
Sure. And he realizes that. The Vikings realize that when looking at Sunday's opponent. That Dallas has, I don't know if it's the number four offensive line, the number two offensive line, but it's an upper echelon offensive line. We can debate, you know, where they rank, but somewhere in that top 5, 6, 7. It's a really good offensive line. They have a really good running back in Ezekiel Elliott. And, yeah, I mean, you look at the importance of Sunday night. I do think there's a pretty significant difference, 4-3, 3-4, getting over that 500 hump. Now, I look at the landscape of the NFC, Judd. I struggle to come up with 7 playoff teams. Like, there's some obvious ones at the top, the Cowboys and the Buccaneers. and the Cardinals and the Rams. Then after that, maybe New Orleans. I mean, I know New Orleans is what, 4-2, so maybe New Orleans. Okay, so that's 5.
Yeah.
Okay. Come up with 2 more. It's really hard.
How in the hell is the East continually this bad now too? Dallas is a nice team now, but beyond that, that division remains just garbage. It's amazing. It's amazing that that group of teams can have at least back-to-back years of being this horse bleep. They're awful.
Yeah, I will give Washington a little bit of a pass. I'm not quite sure why they decided to go with Ryan Fitzpatrick, but with Fitzpatrick, you know, their starting quarterback going down so early in the season, I still think Washington has some guys, especially that defensive front, you know, with all those first-round picks. I mean, they can get after the quarterback. I actually don't think Sunday's result at Lambeau was as lopsided as the final score indicated. So I still think Washington has some guys, but they'll finish below 500. The Giants are going to finish below 500, but they made some tweaks. Philadelphia has all those first-round picks coming up in April, so at least you can see a semblance of a future. I think a lot of people, even, you know, when they signed, you know, former Vikings Anthony Harris and Eric Wilson, I think a lot of people said, you know what, this looks like more of a rebuild this year for Philadelphia. So I still think Philadelphia's future is pretty darn bright. I'm not necessarily surprised that there are below 500 teams. So yeah, 3 of the 4 teams will finish well below 500, you know, and that makes you think, like, if Dak's calf is 80%, 75%, like, if you're Dallas, you could sit him out on Sunday if you wanted to. I mean, it's not like you're in any sort of division race. Now, if you're thinking about the 1 seed, the 2 seed,
right,
you know, some of those implications, okay. You know, and he certainly has dealt with enough injuries the last couple years where Dak might just want to say, you know what, I'm sick of sitting out. Like, I'll play through it. You need to play through some pain. You know, there's playing through pain, and then there's, you know, playing through when you probably shouldn't, which some guys certainly do on occasion, like being an idiot and playing. But, you know, with the calf, he can probably, you know, move around fine. You know, the shoulder's okay. He recovered from that shoulder injury. His upper body is okay. The offensive line can keep him upright. Now, the Vikings have a great pass rush, but if the Cowboys' offensive line can play like they have, maybe if you're Dallas, you say, national TV, let's roll the dice. He'll be okay. He can make enough throws. He can turn around and hand the ball off. He can dump it off to Elliott in the passing game. But, yeah, like 3 teams in the NFC East stink. I'm not a believer in the Atlanta Falcons. I'm not a believer in the Carolina Panthers. You know, you look at Detroit, you know, Chicago, they look like a train wreck. I'm just saying, like, I look at 5 teams, but then you need to fill out 2 more. So who is the 6th seed? Who is the 7th seed? So I still think the Vikings, to me, Judd, can lose on Sunday. And I still think there's a path to making the playoffs, even at 3-4. The question then becomes, let's say they end up as the 6th seed or the 7th seed. They open up the playoffs, let's say, at Tampa or at Arizona. Let's say they end up losing by 10 or 14 points. Then what? So they made the playoffs, then what do you do? They're stuck. We've talked about this before, Jeb, but it's a reminder. They are stuck in middle purgatory.
Mm-hmm. I believe if they make the playoffs, especially as a wild card, which is pretty damn certain that if they do, it will be as a wild card, and they do exactly what you just said, coaching change. That's what I think. I don't think a playoff appearance as a bottom seed is enough now. I think that they need a win, and I think that they need a run. And look, this team, if you look at the personnel, I will continue to say this, the personnel on this team screams playoff team. It still does. It does. And I think a lot of the problems that we saw in the slow start were coaching induced. I think you can point, and look, they won, and I get it, the Detroit game. Nice job by Kirk. Kudos to Kirk. Kirk's been great. But that being said, that Detroit game was a self-inflicted wound that you overcame. And that was a lot of bad coaching and play calling. And so I don't think that the coaching staff has by any means, Doogie, pulled clear of being in trouble here. I think right now, at best, they're going to and are, in fairness, treading water. And that we will see. But your scenario to me would result in a coaching change if you make the playoffs as a low seed, you go and lose a game.
Don't you think that is the most likely scenario, though? Not necessarily them losing, that first playoff game, let's see what the matchup is, but that there is a realistic path because the NFC is so weak from, you know, teams six on down, yep, that with that extra playoff spot, so needing to fill spots 6 and 7, that the Vikings can gain one of those two spots.
Yeah.
So they get in, you know, and go from there. But, like, if they end up having to go to Tampa or another game in Arizona or a game in Dallas, like, I don't know if I love their chances. But you're right. I mean, internally, you know, I've said this before, I'll keep hammering it home. Internally, the expectations, the wilt's on down with many people, are much higher than any of us. Like, I had them preseason at 10 victories. I think internally, a lot of people had them maybe even at 11, 12, even with the difficult schedule, that they really felt like they assembled a really, really good roster that could make a deep run in January.
Wolves scoops, 2-1.
Yeah, well, it's still a roster that's got warts.
An ugly one, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, D'Angelo Russell last night struggled. And, hey, I was reminded his one pop-up year, the really good year, the all-star year, the year in Brooklyn, mm-hmm, he got off to a slow start. So I'm not going to say, okay, you know, struggles in a couple games, that's it. Like, you know, he doesn't fit here. You know, of course you offer him to Philadelphia, even though Philadelphia doesn't want him. I'm not there yet. Like, let's give it some time. But I can tell you, like, they don't have a backup center. Naz Reid is more a 4 and out of 5. They don't have a backup center. They're not going to be a good rebounding team all year long. And I do wonder, this was something I wondered about preseason, and so I can continue to wonder about it, D'Angelo Russell's fit with Anthony Edwards, how those two,
yes,
coexist.
Yes.
And I think at least some people over there, they understand the deficiencies. You know, and I think, you know, if Sutchin can make a move, not necessarily Ben Simmons, because I'm led to believe there hadn't been any Ben Simmons dialogue for at least a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's nothing hopping on the Ben Simmons front. But if you can acquire some other big man, somebody, and when I say big man, you know, Ben Simmons would play the four here, somebody that can play the four, that can rebound or be a backup five, you know, I do think Sutchin Gupta is going to be on the lookout for that. You look at Josh Okogie as the starting four, Jaden McDaniels as the starting three. Mm-hmm. Too often McDaniels is just standing there, you know, above the perimeter or in the corner, you know, and I think that Chris Finch is a brilliant offensive mind. So I think he'll fix some of the offensive issues we've seen, but it's still a mismanaged roster. It's an incomplete roster. I know there's a lot of people excited. You know, I saw some people talking about 50-something wins, all that. There's a reason why the over-under is 34.5. Now, I said I would go slightly over, but even at 35, 36, 37 wins, they're still going to lose more games than they win. And so the roster still needs all sorts of work. But, you know, much like, you know, talk about the Vikings, the landscape of the NFC, you look at the landscape of the Western Conference, we know the Thunder are not a playoff team. We know the Rockets are not a playoff team. I have a hard time believing, unless Zion comes back real soon, that New Orleans is a playoff team. San Antonio, I don't see it. As good a coach as Pop is, I don't see it. So, like, the Wolves are competing with who? Sacramento for a 10 seed? You know, Portland, you know, they don't look all that good, but I still believe in Portland more than I do the Wolves. You know, so, like, I think you're looking at, you know, Minnesota-Sacramento competing for the 10 seed. And I do like the Wolves' chances. I still think they can get into the play-in tournament. Right. But what does that accomplish if you're one and done? You know, but I'm curious to see if they maintain their health. Anthony Edwards was brilliant last night in the third quarter. I mean, he can do so many different things that, you know, I'm okay with them running the offense through him, letting him initiate, you know, a lot of different things. But, like, people need to realize, you know, you need to temper some of those, you know, big expectations that this roster still needs a lot of work.
So this leads me down the path, Dukes, to a question about D'Lo in particular. Because I do think, and we talked about this with Phil on Mackie and Judd today, I do think that there is a learning process here of guys trying to play together for the first time really extensively. But what is your opinion and what have you heard about D'Lo being willing to take this role? Because that seems to me to be the most important thing. Like, this is Ant's team and Cat's team. And D'Lo can play a very important role, but it's a role. He's not a he's not on the marquee until at least third, if that. Is there concern there? Because that is going to be the telltale sign to me is, does D'Lo willingly fit in and say, I'm paid like a star, but the real stars of this team are Ant Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns.
I think there's still an adjustment period there, Judd. You know, and D'Lo will be extension eligible in a year, right? So he's thinking about that next contract, right? And let's not forget that when the Warriors made him available, it's not like there were 10 teams knocking down Golden State's door to acquire D'Angelo Russell. Now, I think there was more than the Wolves, but I think it was maybe just one more team. Like, I don't think there was this thick trade market for D'Angelo Russell. I think he's got more fans than actual, you know, people in the league that say, that's a winning player. Give me that guy. He is going to impact winning. Now, I do think he's an elite shot maker. I think, you know, he can make some incredible shots. Do I think he's an elite playmaker? No. Is he a plus defender? No. Do I think he can be a better passer? I do. So he still has a ways to go. But in terms of the fit, I think there's still an adjustment period there. I'm not saying it can't happen, but right now I would say that there's still some work to be done in that regard.
Interesting. You said before we started, what is the news out of Toronto regarding the Raptors president of basketball operations, and is there a Wolves tie in there?
Yeah, well, so one of the Toronto publications, I can't recall if it was The Star or The Sun. You can Google Masai Ujiri's name. So he's the Raptors' big boss in the front office. There was this huge story on Monday in one of the Toronto publications. And within that story, because apparently the head of Rogers Communications, you know, is wondering why they're paying Masai so much. He makes north of $15 million a year. Now, you get that sort of coin after helping a franchise win a championship, right? The Kawhi Leonard trade, you know, shipping that franchise a couple of years ago when the Raptors won it all. So he has earned all that money. But that there's some head of Rogers Communications there in Toronto that is wondering, okay, why are we paying him so much money? But that's not germane to this conversation. Who cares, right? We don't care about that. The part we care about is within that story, there was a note that there was an NBA franchise this summer that was willing to pay Ujiri north of $15 million, give him a raise from what he's making with the Raptors, what the Raptors were willing to pay him with his new contract, and give him a sliver of ownership. Now, we talked about it at the time because I believe it was Mark Stein, some other national reporter, had loosely connected Masai Ujiri to the Minnesota Timberwolves. I continue to hear that there was something there, presumably led by Mark Lori. This was not a Glenn Taylor-driven idea. It was not an Alex Rodriguez-driven idea. I'm led to believe it was a Mark Lori-driven idea. I don't know how far the dialogue got, that if Lori or somebody else with the Wolves contacted Ujiri's agent, if there was a direct conversation with Ujiri, maybe in Vegas at Summer League, or if it was just internal chatter. But I can tell you that I am led to believe from multiple sources that would absolutely know that Masai Ujiri was on Wolves ownership, their collective minds at some point this summer. Again, I can't tell you, Judd, how far that went, but it's something interesting to keep an eye on as we look ahead to whether Sachin Gupta gets elevated. Will he be the full-time president of operations, or do they make an outside hire, whether that's, you know, a Masai Ujiri, or do they go after somebody else offering a sliver of ownership, or do they hire somebody like Elton Brand, who's number two in Philadelphia, or somebody like, you know, Landry Fields, who's a number two or number three, or a Calvin Booth, who's a number two? What direction do they go? But I'm telling you, it's a fascinating thing to talk about and think about, that to attract a candidate like Ujiri here to Minnesota, you have to make that sort of offer. You do. You offer ownership. You think out of the box with an offer. That's your only hope, to get a guy like that to come here to run a franchise that just doesn't have a great reputation league-wide, and it is Minnesota. It's not like guys are yearning to come here to Minnesota. So I appreciate, I commend the Wolves for thinking out of the box along those lines.
Gopher football is back, Doogie. Three consecutive wins. If they win on what, Saturday against Northwestern, and Iowa were to lose to Wisconsin, first place alone in the Big Ten West. Bowling Green, a long forgotten nightmare now. What can you tell us about what's going on with PJ Fleck and Gopher football?
Well, and they should win on Saturday. I mean, Northwestern in its last three Big Ten games has a combined 21 points. They are atrocious offensively. The Gophers' defense is rolling. So the expectation should be that the Gophers go down to Evanston. It'll be a pro Gophers crowd. There will be plenty of maroon and gold in the stands. I was on SeatGeek earlier today contemplating ever so slightly taking the boys on a road trip, but I don't think it's going to work out. We may end up in Iowa City November 13th, but I don't think we'll end up in Evanston this Saturday. But you can get in for about $10. Like, it's not an expensive ticket at Ryan Field in Evanston. And so I was thinking about it. But, yeah, I mean, this should be a game that the Gophers win. And it still will come down to those Iowa and Wisconsin games. I mean, if Wisconsin knocks off Iowa on Saturday, Judd, you know, Wisconsin still will have a chance. So you would look at that Gophers-Wisconsin game on, what is it, November 27th as a key game. Then even if Iowa loses on Saturday, if Iowa beats the Gophers on November 13th, Iowa would have that tiebreaker. So I still think it comes down to those two games. But, yeah, you look at Northwestern into Illinois. I mean, the Gophers should win their next two. They should have, what, a 5 or 6 game winning streak heading into Iowa City on November 13th.
And finally, Gopher basketball. I love this one. 2021, and we still have secret scrimmages that nobody can watch and nobody knows who won.
Yeah, and I mean, heck, if this was an actual game, it would have been the best game on the Gophers' schedule non-conference-wise. Like, the Gophers' non-conference schedule is as big a joke as you'll ever see. Now, I get what Ben Johnson is doing. I mean, he realizes it's going to be a long year, his first year, so it's not like you're going to schedule a bunch of really tough opponents non-conference-wise. But, yeah, the Gophers were in Norman, Oklahoma on Saturday for a secret scrimmage. Now, in years past, it has leaked out who the Gophers were playing in these secret scrimmages, and the Gophers from their Twitter account would tweet out a box score, maybe even some photos, that after the fact, it wouldn't necessarily be a secret. Well, in this case, they have decided, both sides, to keep it completely quiet. I've checked with a number of people. I don't know who won. Now, I don't think the Gophers won because I know that their roster, it's not good. I mean, there's a reason why they're picked to finish last in the Big Ten. Now, I like the recruits that Ben has so far committed for next year. I think with Dave Thorson, with those other assistant coaches, they are going to be relentless on the recruiting trail. So I am willing to give them some time. I'm not going to formulate all these strong takes based on this year because I realize that the roster, I mean, it's not good. It's not, you know, and injuries certainly have hurt too with Parker Fox, with Isaiah Enan. I mean, if it had those two guys, I'd feel maybe a little bit better. Maybe they could finish 13th or 12th in the Big Ten, not 14th. But it is going to be a very long season. But I can tell you one thing. I can tell you, coming out of Norman on Saturday, the Gophers did not suffer any more injuries. They came out of the scrimmage completely healthy. But again, I don't know who won. Now, I think if the Gophers had won, I probably would have heard, you know, even if it was a 2-point win. Sure. But I think if they had won, or maybe even lost a competitive game, I think I would have heard about it. So without knowing anything about Oklahoma's roster, that's Porter Moser. His first year, he went from Loyola of Chicago to Oklahoma. That's one of Ben Johnson's good buddies. So that's how that scrimmage came about. Ben reached out to his good buddy, Moser, and it was organized, and the Gophers flew down there and played this scrimmage. But, yeah, I don't know who won, but, yeah, I don't feel good about the Gophers' chances in most games. So playing against, you know, a Power 5 school, you know, or Power 6, depending on how you look at the Big East for basketball, you know, playing against a pretty big-name program, a program that's had plenty of success, yeah, I'm not quite sure the Gophers – you know, fared particularly well. But the win is they're healthy. That you play this scrimmage that nobody knows about, the last thing you want is for somebody to get hurt. So they came out of Norman healthy.
Thanks, Dukes. We will talk to you for more scoopage on Thursday on Mackie and Judd, okay?
Okay, sounds good, boys. See ya.